This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. When you say the phrase, a new era is about to begin, and you're talking about sports, you might be accused of hyperbole. But in this case, I think we're safe in saying that a new era is about to begin at UNC Charlotte. On August 31st, right after a coin toss and a brand new stadium, a brand new team will take the field and 49er football will begin. College football is the big kahuna, the money sport, the sport that puts a school on the map with fans, with students, with possible students, and with alumni. So the dawn of a football program comes with great potential, and we're going to explore that potential today with the head coach of the team that has yet to lose a game, Coach Brad Lambert. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
I should say welcome back because you were here before and I was not. So nice to meet you.
Yeah, good to see you.
Also with us is Judy Rose, UNC Charlotte's longtime athletic director. Nice to have you back with us.
Thank you.
And Philip Dubois, chancellor of UNC Charlotte, is also returning to the program. Thank you for joining us as well.
Good morning, Mike.
Let me start with you. If I understand this correctly, when the idea of football was first floated, you were not too keen on the idea. I think you made a speech in 2005 where somebody asked you about football, and you said, well, it's just not the right time. And a year later, it was the right time. So what happened?
Actually, when I was being recruited as chancellor, the search committee had identified football as one of the things they wanted the new chancellor to look at. I arrived in the summer of 2005 and took about 6 months to take a look at all the things the university had to do. And I just concluded that we had a lot more important things to worry about. And I was careful to say we had a lot more important things to worry about in the first year. Mm-hmm. Around the next year or so, though, as I went out and met with people in the community and in alumni groups in particular, it really became overwhelmingly clear that this was an issue that the university had to resolve one way or the other. It's all people wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about growing the enrollment, faculty research, public service, but football was the deal. So Mac Everett, who was then my board chair, and I talked, and we agreed we put it before the trustees in their retreat in December of 2006, and they overwhelmingly voted to form a feasibility committee, and Mac rotated off the board and agreed to chair that group.
Hmm. Several years ago, in a little show that I do on the side called Charlotte Squawks, Judy, Chancellor Dubois was in the audience one night, and I made a special attempt to tell a joke about the university, and I said, "You want to hear a joke about UNC Charlotte?" And everybody went, "Yeah," and I said, "Football." Well, the joke's on me.
yes, it is.
So how long have you been pushing for this?
Well, actually, 2 years prior to the chancellor really delving into it and appointing the feasibility committee, the rumblings that he was hearing, we were hearing also from the students, current students, and from the alumni. Mm-hmm. And so my senior staff started 2 years prior to the announcement that we would have football, having 4 to 8 hour day retreats, trying to figure out and learn as much as we could about, all right, let's assume it's going to happen. I remember my staff member saying, do you realize how much time we've spent doing this? What if we don't add it? I said, you're going to be so much smarter. And if you go somewhere else that has football, you're going to be able to really add something to it. But right. I did think it was probably going to happen and we needed to be as prepared as possible.
Am I wrong in saying that there used to be a football team?
In 1946, there was a...
Actually, it was 48, 49, and it might have been the first year of Charlotte College, actually, but it was 1 year. Mm-hmm. They were called the Charlotte Owls, and they broke up for lack of attendance.
Hopefully that won't happen now. So it seemed to me that once the decision was made to do this, that it all came together in remarkable speed. I mean, this decision was made to do it when? 2006, 7?
Let's see. The feasibility study went through 2006, 7, and then I took a few months. It was probably the fall of 07 that we made the decision.
So it's been 6 years, and the first game, August 31st, and you're in a stadium that's been completed. I assume it's been completed.
It is completed.
Isn't that a remarkably quick time to find coaches, to announce a program, to recruit players, to build a stadium, to make room for them in the athletic department, to find funding for all of this?
Right.
That seems like lightning speed to me.
Well, and you have to remember that, generally speaking, this was a, a process that had to go through our Board of Trustees. It then had to go through the Board of Governors because they approved the fee that the students said they would pay mm-hmm. for debt service for the stadium and operations of the football program. And then it actually went to the legislature because the legislature approves any measure to build something on bonds. And so it was a long process to get through.
Talk to me about the fees that the students said they would pay, because people are talking all over the country about how much it costs to go to college now and how students are leaving college with enormous debt
right.
that they will spend a good part of their adulthood trying to pay off. And here you are adding a fee, a student fee, for football, a frivolous sideline activity.
Well, to the student.
Did they want it? Did they really want it?
They absolutely did. And mm-hmm. to the students, this was part of them having a complete college experience.
Mm-hmm.
And to the alumni, it was part of, and to the community, it was part of connecting to the university. One of the things that's changed at UNC Charlotte over the years is we're not the commuter college that your father thought of.
Right.
We are now a largely residential college with traditionally aged freshmen and sophomores and juniors and seniors who would like an athletic program that's complete. So just on the fee question, one of the things that came out of the feasibility study was, well, there was no obvious way to pay for the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And so the students and I got together and talked about, are the students willing to pay not only a fee to run the program, hire the coaches and get the equipment and do all the things you need to do to run a program, but are you willing to pay a fee to float the debt? And the answer was overwhelmingly yes.
What is the fee?
The football fee is $200, and it's been phased in over 4 years. So this will be – next year will be the last year of phasing in the football fee.
Mm-hmm.
The debt service fee is $120. So it's about $320 to the average full-time student to support the football program. And that's part of a larger athletic fee, which supports all of our intercollegiate sports.
Is that on average what it is at other major schools?
Yeah, I certainly think it is. We've budgeted this at a pretty average level for where we're going to play.
Do they have to pay to get into the games, or do they get into the games for free?
No, it's going to be 7,500 out of the 15,000 seats are reserved mm-hmm. for students, and there's a lottery basically for the students to get into every game, and there's no additional cost except what they may buy in
right.
concessions.
You cannot have a team without a coaching staff and without a head coach, and Brad Lambert, you spent 10 years at Wake Forest and also worked at George and Marshall. And I know as I told you before we started this program, I know nothing about football, but I have seen We Are Marshall. So I understand their football. You went after this job, and it would seem to me that building a program from zero is an enormous undertaking. Why did you want this job?
Well, I think first for me was the attraction was the location, you know, the city and this surrounding region. You know, you have a chance to recruit players and students to this area, and that's where it started for me. And I wanted to, you know, interview and get in, you know, see what football was all about. Do we really want football at Charlotte, or do we just say we want football? How committed are we? And so that was the thing for me. And then when I interviewed, it was easy to see the plan that was laid out before I ever arrived on the scene was phenomenal. I mean, the work that went into, you know, setting this thing up is just amazing to me. And that's what I saw, you know, when I interviewed. And now that I've got to, you know, live that for 2.5 years, it's just a great plan that's been laid out, you know, from day one. A lot of work.
Yeah,
you've
been here for 2.5 years after being at Wake Forest and other schools, and for 2.5 years you've been building a program but not fielding a team and not playing any games. Yeah. Has it been like a vacation?
Not really.
No pressure.
Not really. It's been a lot of detail stuff, you know, things like designing fields and uniforms and helmets and just little, you know, I was here for a month. We didn't have a pencil, so we had to order everything. You know, we had to get everything. And there's a lot of, you know, when you hire that many people, you know, when you hire 20 people in a football office, you know, that's a undertaking because you want to get the right people. And, you know, it takes time. And we had it planned out when we would hire people. You know, that was all in place before I ever arrived. And that's made it extremely easy for me. All the work that had been done made this part of it easy from implementing the football.
I don't know if this is true. I read an article about this yesterday. And, Judy, I'm told that he was just up the street in Winston-Salem, and he had applied for this job, and it was about a month before the deadline that you had set for yourself to announce a coach, and you'd never heard of him. Well, and you read his resume and thought, I got to talk to this guy, and you met halfway.
Well, it was. It was an interesting story. My administrative assistant was not in the office that day. She was out sick, and she opens my mail. Mm-hmm. And we had a system in place that when she opened the mail, she would hand those resumes or request for interest in the position to two senior associate athletic directors. They would then vet them, and if they thought they were good enough, they'd put them on my desk. So I don't know who opened my mail that day, mm-hmm. but Brad's letter was right on top. I swear, I think he snuck in and put it there is what I told him that. And so I thought, oh, okay. So I read the letter, and I called the two senior associates. I said, did y'all see this? And they went, no, we don't know who he is. And I went, what? And so I read it. I said, well, this is really piquing my interest, what this letter says. It was not your cookie-cutter letter.
What did it say?
It basically talked about work ethic, being raised on a farm in Kansas, playing football, you know, really coming up and making his way in football, mm-hmm. and everything he had done and everything, every place he'd been and the mentors that he'd had. Just a very unusual letter of application to me. If I'd had a stack of them, that one would have risen to the top. And we'd already talked to several folks and potential applicants for this job. But it really did get my attention. So I reached back out to those two senior associate ADs and said, find as much information as you can about Brad Lambert. Everywhere he's been, what he's done, who he's been with, in this, and make some calls to your colleagues. And that I think that happened on a Tuesday. On a Wednesday, we got all the information, and I contacted Brad and mm-hmm. said, let's meet. And we met in Statesville at the Outback Steakhouse.
That's right.
And I actually involved my senior staff and told them I wanted them to come up, and we were going to meet there. And we had this big round table, and we did it at an unusual hour where nobody would know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday.
Ah. Yeah. Where do you begin? You get the job, and you have to build this program, and you have a deadline because August 31st is not a movable date. It is when it is. And I think the first time you came in, you said 1,000-some days till the first game.
Yeah.
So you were counting from the beginning. So where do you begin?
Well, you always begin with your staff and the people that you're going to surround yourself with. And me personally, I wanted to start with our coordinators. You know, who's going to run our offense? Who's going to run our defense? And that's really where we started. You know, and I knew all the time frames for when we'd recruit in the spring, all those things I'd been doing for years. So mm-hmm. I knew when we had to have things up and running and be on the road by April 15th and things like that. So there was a good plan in place. We hired guys April 1st. We got on the road April 15th, and we had to buy them some shirts, and we went out and started spreading our brand. But that's where you start, is the people that are going to put in place and who's going to handle what and how we're going to do it. And That's the most important part.
How do you recruit young football players to a school that has no record in football, no reputation in football, has never fielded a team in football? Why do they choose to come here versus Chapel Hill or some other place?
Well, I think we laugh at the press conference. I was asked that question, and obviously, there's a real good chance they'll play because there's nobody else. So that's an attractive thing for them. But we really, the power of being first resonated well with the recruits, and they being the first one to run out on the field and being the first part of the first team was really powerful for the guys.
I want to talk more about who these guys are because we'll soon know them because they'll be on the field in just a few days. But we have to take a break. Brad Lambert's the new head coach, the 49er football at UNC Charlotte. Judy Rose, the athletic director, and Philip Dubois, the chancellor of the university. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Community School of the Arts, teaching art and music at more than a dozen studios across Charlotte, now registering for fall group classes and private lessons. Details online at csarts.org. And Ferguson Bath Kitchen and Lighting Gallery, with products like Thermador's Masterpiece and Professional Appliance Series. Ferguson supplies kitchen and bath design needs to complement all lifestyles. Details at ferguson.com. In violation of the North Carolina Mining Act of 1971, the state issued a permit to take the top off of Bellevue Mountain. Well, Jay Luzzi had a law degree but had never taken the bar exam, deciding instead to live a quiet life in his family's cabin on a nearby mountain. But then he received a phone call from a 14-year-old that started an odyssey to save a mountain and preserve the landscape. And we'll hear that story tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, regional powers are taking sides in the conflict between Egypt's interim military government and ousted Muslim Brotherhood leaders. Debate over U.S. leverage and its potential role in the conflict.
Join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're talking about something we 5 years ago would never talk about. We just simply made a rule we were not going to talk about, 49er football, because there was no 49er football. But on August 31st, there will be. And by the way, you're invited to a panel discussion about 49ers football, the impact on town and gown. The event is Tuesday, August 27th at 7 p.m. at UNC Charlotte Center City. And you can find information about that on our website at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. Brad Lambert is the head football coach. Judy Rose is the athletic director. And Philip Dubois is the chancellor. And they're all here in our studio. Is there less pressure in the first few years, Brad Lambert, to win because it's a new program and expectations are low? Or is there great pressure to win because it's a new program and you want to make a name for yourself?
Well, I think internally, you know, we expect to do well, you know, with our team. But I think everybody understands that, you know, we're limited on our roster size. And, you know, everybody we play, it doesn't matter who we play against, they'll have older guys. They'll have seniors and juniors. And we have a limited number of those through the transfer system. But I think everybody understands that, you know, hey, we expect to do well. But at the same time, you know, we do play against people that have older guys.
How many people came out for football or did you recruit for football? And how many of those are on that? Well, the team is the team. But, I mean, how many people did you talk to?
Well, our first team that came to campus last August was about 80 players, 82, mm-hmm. somewhere in that range. We've lost about 25 players over that year, mm-hmm. Brought in new players, and our roster size right now is right at 102 players. So we brought in new kids this year, and our roster size will always be right around 102.
Was it difficult to recruit coaches? Because I would think the ranks of coaches came from people who were working elsewhere and they're coming into a new program. So is that difficult or is it a challenge?
It was an interesting challenge from the standpoint of you were asking guys to kind of get out of coaching for a couple of years.
Yeah.
They were still recruiting, but they weren't on the field coaching. And so that was one of the questions the chancellor and Judy asked me. How are you going to handle not being on the field for 2 years? Can you handle that? And so we just took it as an opportunity to go learn. As Coach Grobe told me when I took the job, he goes, most of the time to go study other people, you have to get fired to do that, to be out for a year. So we were afforded that, you know, opportunity to go study other people and make sure, you know, that we had an idea of what we wanted to do. Just you get a good feel for what everybody else is doing. And we like this, we don't like that. But it was an interesting, you know, getting guys to buy in and take the risk with us.
What are your expectations, Judy Rose? What kind of expectations have you put on the coach here and on the other coaches in the program for this first couple of years? Are they supposed to be better than the Panthers?
We want. I'm not going to answer that question. We want us to be as competitive as we can be, at the same time being realistic. And Brad's answer is absolutely correct. Everybody on our roster has fielded a football team for years. Mm-hmm. That might have been at a lesser level than what we are aspiring to be when we moved to Conference USA in football. But we are a startup program, and they've been playing. So we're realistic. Now, on the flip side, I'm extremely competitive. So sure, I want to win every ball game. Do we expect that? Do we expect that of any of our other teams as well? No, but we'd love for it to happen. And that is certainly our goal, is to win as many games as possible. But we are realistic in the approach that we're taking with football.
And Chancellor Dubois, there's a big investment at the university that they put into this program. Enormous. What does that mean to you? How important are wins to you? And will it become increasingly more important as time goes on and we have an alumni that's a group that's used to having a football team? And by gosh, They want those people to win. Let's get a winner in there. How do you? What are your expectations?
I've already predicted that we should beat Campbell 49-0. So I'm
that's the first game.
He's on record.
I'm on record.
And if not, you're out.
No.
To understand my perspective on winning, you have to understand that when I went to Wyoming as president in 1997, we were the 18th ranked Division I football program in the country. I think we had a terrific record, great coach. And under my leadership over the next 8 years, we took them to the absolute bottom, 1-11. So, and what I learned from
1-11,
that
that's a Panther record.
What I learned from that experience is that you do need to win and you need to be competitive, but not at all costs. I mean, a lot of the economics behind this depend on a good, solid, competitive team. You have to put cheeks in the seats. You have to have people come to the games. That drive your sponsorships, your gate, your television revenues, and frankly, your students' tolerance for paying that fee. I mean, they're excited now, but they're undefeated. And so, I don't think our expectations for Brad and the coaches are unreasonable. It's like everything else. Do things in balance, and we'll be fine.
You know, the school got along for a very long time without a football team. Mm-hmm. Why now, and what will this mean for the school going forward?
That was really the question for our feasibility study and for me personally, which was why do this now? And the answer came down to three things. It came down to the changing demographic of the students and their desire to have a full college experience. The growth of our alumni, which is now 100,000 people, about 70,000 in the Charlotte area. And the third was the just the engagement of the community. Erskine Bowles, the former president of the UNC system, when he came to Charlotte in early 2006, and he said to the Rotary Club downtown, he said, "This public university is so important to you, more important than you know from an economic development standpoint, but the number one thing the community needs to do is to own its public university." Mm-hmm. And we got to thinking about that hard. Well, how do we get the community to own us? And for better or for worse, athletics are an important portal for most people looking into the university and getting engaged. And I'll tell you, since we've announced it, when I walk on the street, that's a number one topic of conversation. I'd wish they'd say, "How's that physics program of yours?" But they talk about football.
If you had brought this team into existence in the 1960s or 70s or 80s, you would be the big football program in this region. But now we have NFL football here. Does that make it more difficult to get interest in the program from the outside, from the townies, so to speak?
I don't think so. Frankly, we hear a lot about our students going up to App State or Chapel Hill or NC State.
To watch a game
or even down to Georgia or South Carolina. So we hope we keep them home. We're the only Division I program in this region.
There's been a lot of talk in recent years about the NCAA and all the rules they put on players and whether or not they're living in a dream world and the whole thing should be ripped out and started over again, and we should pay these athletes because they're making money for the schools, et cetera. And then you have this pressure to win, as witnessed by what happened at your sister school in Chapel Hill. The only reason we really talk about Chapel Hill football is because of the scandal, because gosh knows they haven't got a team. I'm just kidding.
I should light up the phones.
That's right. I'm just joking. That's a little joke. That's all that is. When that scandal goes away and they rebuild their program, will there be this big rivalry between the two of you?
I think eventually we'll have rivalries with East Carolina and NC State and Chapel Hill and South Carolina in time.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Brad, it's been said of you that you have the patience and resilience required to build a new football program. On the other hand, you have 23 years of experience in coaching. You've experienced postseason and bowl success, an NCAA national championship, an ACC title, 8 bowl games, 4 NCAA national championship games, and a winning percentage of over 62%. How eager are you to experience that kind of success with the 49ers, and how much time have you given yourself to hit some of these benchmarks?
Well, yeah. Well, we can't go to postseason play here for a couple of years.
Right.
So we, like I said earlier, we do expect to win. We want to instill that in our guys, and we want to do well when we go out. But As the chancellor said, you know, we want to be a first-class part of the university, just like our business school or an engineering school, or, you know, we want to represent our university in the right way, and we don't want to do it at the cost of breaking rules and things like that. So, you know, we expect to do well. We did that at Wake Forest. We won at a high level and did it the right way, and I think that was really good for me to spend that time under Jim Grobe and understand that, you know, you can you know, recruit the right guys and do it the right way and win games at the same time. And that's our goal, and that's what we want to do.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, with respect to academic and athletic integrity, we've also taken some steps on the governance side to try to do a good job of oversight. Not to say that problems can't arise, but our trustees have a new athletic committee that looks at a lot of data about athletics and particularly student-athletes' academics. We've looked at the enrollment of the students in independent studies courses. That was one of the issues at Chapel Hill. We don't have that problem here. We've looked at the clustering of students in certain majors. We don't have that issue here. Our academic advisors don't report to the athletic director. They report to the provost. Our compliance person works with the athletic director but ultimately reports to my general counsel. So we've tried to build in a system that provides as many checks and balances as possible. Of course, it builds with the integrity of the guy you've got leading the program. Mm-hmm. But and we believe very deeply in Brad Lambert in that regard.
And that program at Wake Forest was like this. It was academically successful program.
Right, no question. And that, like I said, that started with Coach Grobe and the kind of guys that you went out as an assistant coach and recruited. And that's the message that I give to our coaches is, you know, when we go out in these high schools, you know, you have to ask questions and ask guidance counselors and not just coaches. You know, you've got to find out about these guys and, hey, are this the guy that we want to be around for the next four or 5 years? And does he have the academic base to graduate from college? I mean, that's the ultimate goal. You know, we need them to leave here with their degree. If they never play a snap for us, they need to leave here with their degree. And that's... You know, we just have to do a good job of that when we go out and recruit and canvass the state of North Carolina and South Carolina and Georgia, and you're out in all these high schools.
You were the defensive coordinator at Wake Forest when you left, and before that you were a linebacker coach. Mm-hmm. What did you learn in those positions that you now bring with you as the head coach?
Well, I think one of the things about football, when you're an assistant coach, you have your group of guys, which you influence. There's about 10 or 12 of them that you influence, and then you make that step to coordinator, and now you influence half the team. You know, so you're a direct influence on 50 of the guys on the football team, and those experiences and relating to players and having them understand that you care more about them as a person than just a jersey number. I think that's what gets lost is, If you only see a guy as number four and the only thing he can do for you is intercept a pass, then you know, you're kind of getting lost in the process. And so that was one of the things that I loved about Coach Grobe. You know, it was the kids are more than just a jersey number, and we took that philosophy. And now as the head coach, you get influence all 102 of them, and our coaches know what I expect from that standpoint.
You have said character, integrity, and toughness is how you did it at Wake Forest, and it is how you will do it here. Talk about those three attributes and how they come into play in college football.
Well, I think you know, character is something that we do. It's our recruiting philosophy. That's what we did at Wake Forest, and that's a direct reflection of Coach Grobe and how we did that. And you have to, as I said earlier, bring the right guys. You know, you have to. Nobody's perfect, and we'll have guys make mistakes and all that. But that has to be where we start, is not with the football side of it, but with the character side of it. And what kind of guy is he? And then the integrity thing is, this guy, you know, all of a sudden I have 100 new children in my family and I need to sleep at night. So, you know, you want the guys to do the right thing, and you want to model that for them and show them the integrity that's in place. And we expect our coaches to not break rules and do the right thing. So those two components are extremely important. And then, you know, a toughness side of it, football is a tough game. It's not an easy game physically. Mentally, there's going to be a lot of adversity that happens throughout a game. And so, you know, toughness is something that you have to build on your team, and guys have to be physically tough and mentally tough to handle that. And as they leave the university, when they go out in life, that's a, you know, they've got to be, you're going to face adversity when you leave and you go out in life. And You know, as I tell the guys all the time, you'll look up and you've been coaching 20-some years and you have three children looking at you. Where are we eating tonight, Dad? You know, I mean, it's just part of the process.
In those three words, character, integrity, and toughness, and you put them in the same sentence with the word sports, and it sounds very old-fashioned. I mean, it sounds like what I grew up with thinking and believing and what you know, we flag-waving Americans wearing the white hat, and that's what we did. Little League and peewee football and on through high school football was about those things. And then you read about all the things that are happening in both professional sports and college athletics with athletes doping and people not going to classes and yet passing because, you know, they're football players. And you begin to get a little cynical about all of this. And I'm wondering if young people, the recruits, the young students who are becoming athletes at this level, buy into this, or are they – is that just words? Are they cynical about it too?
No, you know what we found at Wake Forest over the years and we're finding now at UNC Charlotte is there are a lot of good football players in America. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of good players, and you can find guys that do it the right way. And there are high school programs out there that do it the right way. And there are just enough good players. You know, we always fought the issue at Wake Forest is – or, you know, we said we had a recruiting pool, a puddle instead of a pool, you know, because we there weren't a lot of guys we could go after. And there are enough players out there that can play the game, that make good decisions and that have good academics. And so there's plenty of guys to find. And I think it works out.
You know,
out.
And it's interesting. There are probably, I think, about 117 Division I football programs right now. Mm-hmm. Roughly 100 players per program. You can do the math. So there are literally thousands of football players out there who don't call attention to themselves and don't get on the media or being in trouble. It's not to say there haven't been problems, but I certainly think as a program in all of our sports, Judy and I have viewed those issues of character and integrity as very important. I can tell you a very quick story. When we were recruiting Brad, Judy did a lot of due diligence on coaches, but she brought me two finalists. Brad was one. We sat down in my living room. We chatted. Then she brought in the second person, who is a very senior person from a very prominent Southeastern Conference school. And I asked him the kind of softball question. I said, well, what about, you know, getting students to class and academics and that kind of thing? He says, if you don't admit them, you're going to play against them. And that was his language for saying, take whoever you can get, regardless of their academic ability, because they need to be on the football banging against the other team. And I just looked at Judy after 11. I said, we're going with this Lambert guy because we just didn't need that. That wasn't at all consistent with what we wanted.
Well, let me ask you about this, because it's very easy to talk in glowing terms today because there hasn't been a game played. But as the program becomes more and more and more and more established down the road for years to come, how do you continue to balance this out, the need to field a good team for all the reasons we've talked about, but also the need to turn out educated people at the end of the process? It's a very sticky wicket, it seems to me.
We've done it in all of our other sports. The addition of football.
The football's the big gun. That's
well,
it. There's nothing bigger.
Well, there's nothing bigger just because of the sheer numbers of it. But we're not treating football any differently from our level of expectations than we do in our other sports.
Today. But what about 10 years from now?
Basketball has been our premier sport. Mm-hmm. We never treated it differently. We kicked the best player off the team. And because they're not going by rules and regulations, so we intend to treat football the same way with the same integrity and core values.
We're going to come right back with more of our conversation about 49er football, which kicks off August the 31st. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Tyndall Subaru in Gastonia, presenting the Subaru A Lot to Love event in August, a full line of all-wheel drive Subaru vehicles, including the new 2014 Forester. Details at TyndallSubaru.com. And the John R. McAdams Company, Incorporated, pursuing engineering excellence for over 34 years. McAdams, designing tomorrow's infrastructure and communities. McAdamsCO.com. Regional powers are taking sides in the conflict between Egypt's interim military government and the ousted Muslim Brotherhood leaders. And they're going to explore the debate over U.S. leverage, and its potential role in the conflict coming up 20 minutes on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock. And if you'd like to get on our 49er conversation, WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. or ct@wfae.org. Good ways to get to us. We're coming right back.
News happens at any time with a speed that can take your breath away. Public radio reporters are getting the story straight right here in the next state over and around the world. It's a network that keeps you connected. It's a network that never shuts down. Check in for an update on your world.
NPR News, plus local and regional news all day on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Brad Lambert is the new head football coach of the 49ers. They play their first game August 31st in a brand new stadium with a brand new team. They are lossless at the moment. Judy Rose is athletic director. Philip Dubois is the chancellor of the university. We have a couple of questions that I would not have thought to ask, and they're from listeners. So let me ask them now. One question from, I don't know who sent this. Where do you plan or envision tailgating taking place? Is it going to be very controlled, or will you let people kind of set up camp wherever they can?
We have a tailgating policy. If they go on the Charlotte 49er football website, they'll find the tailgating policy that was developed. As a result, we had a committee on campus that made all kind of calls and studied other institutions, and then we brought it forward to the chancellor as to this is what the recommendation of the committee is, and it was chaired by our dean of students. So we involved everybody in that. But tailgating will take place essentially all over the campus, but there are designated surface parking lots, and then you can do the cooking out in those.
Of course, all the games are at noon, right?
Yes.
So it'll be brunch. It'll be a tailgate brunch.
It'll be brunch and for some lunch, and they'll probably stay afterwards. They have 2 hours afterwards before we run them off, and they can have a dinner.
Now, this is a school. Is there an alcohol policy?
There is an alcohol policy, absolutely.
What is it?
Well,
it's on the website.
It's on the website as well. But people have to be of age, and our police force will be out and checking different.
And it's also true that the alcohol and beverage control folks come to these things and cruise around.
Right.
So any student who's drinking underage is liable to get cited if they're not careful.
That emailer says, "Go Niners, let's remain undefeated." So the heat is on.
Oh, here we go.
Scott emails, ask him about marching band and why they are not fielding one. Yeah.
Well, it was.
You have a great music program out there.
There's good news and bad news.
Okay.
The original take on a marching band was that we had to fund a football program first. And we didn't have the money to do a marching band, and we wanted to see how the budget was going to settle out.
Will there be a band in the stands?
There will.
Is there a fight song?
There is a – well, we have our fight song, but there will be a drum line this year.
Okay.
We have funded 25 young people, volunteers. I've provided some money, and Gene Johnson, who was our former board chair and now head of the foundation, and my wife, Lisa Lewis Dubois, went out and raised $100,000 very quickly to fund the drum line. And we're working right now on funding the marching band for the fall of 2015 when we take the stand as a take the field as a Conference USA team.
Now I was in marching band in high school.
I have never asked
you, really? I have never asked a coach or a football player how they feel about the marching band, aside from the fact we go out and ruin the field at halftime. How important is that to you, or are they just a nuisance, like
no,
a fly on the wall?
Definitely not a nuisance. They're a part of the whole pageantry of college football, and they're extremely important. And, you know, I've gotten that question a lot. I always, you know, put it off on the chancellor. Got a lot of issues. Let him handle the marching band, but extremely important.
Yeah. We have artificial turf, Mike, so they can't run.
Yeah.
All right. Celine emails, critically important question, she says. Will there be beer served in the stadium during the game?
No.
Okay. Catherine emails, I remember when UNCC was known as a suitcase campus. All the students went home or to other schools on the weekend. With all the new buildings and dorms on campus, there seems to be a new wave of energy and excitement. Football creates such a unique community and bond. And I believe 49ers football is going to be the cherry on top in making students want to stay in town on the weekends.
We agree. And in fact, we have 5,000 beds on campus. We're expanding to 7,000 over time. But if you look at what's happened in University City, there are thousands of apartments around the campus within walking distance and where students are housed. And that's one of the reasons that we decided to put the stadium on campus, mm-hmm. so it was accessible. It'll also be directly accessible to two stops on the light rail line starting in 2017, one just off campus, one on campus. So we think that's one of the reasons to do it, which is to unite the neighborhood.
I don't remember whether you told me this on the air or off the air. I think it was on the air, Judy, that the student lottery took place for student tickets, and in the first day, 7,000 tickets were bought. What about off-campus people? One of the goals here, I think, is to open the school up to the city of Charlotte and make the city in Charlotte want to embrace this school that has always been thought of as being way out of town. It isn't. It's 10 minutes from downtown, but everybody thinks it's way out of town. How are you attracting people to the game who are not students, who are not alumni, and how important is that?
Well, it's all very important, and they've all had an opportunity over the last 4 years to purchase a seat license, and mm-hmm. that was the philosophy that we developed. And we have sold over 5,000 of those seat licenses, and actually we are sold out for the first game. General public right now cannot walk up. We have a waiting list.
And it's on television, right?
And it is on WCCB, on television. And we did sell a few season tickets, and it did not take long. Those went out without an FSL. That were outside the footprint of the FSLs. So there is no real availability for walk-up right now, which is a good thing in that regard, because I'm a firm believer in supply and demand. And we know we're going to have a packed stadium, and it's going to have an awesome atmosphere.
Are the games on radio?
Yes, it'll be on radio, 7:30 ESPN.
7:30 a.m.
Okay. When you held your first press conference, Brad, when you were announced as head coach, more than a few of your former players who are now in the NFL and other places flew in to be with you, which is kind of impressive. Aaron Curry, who plays with the Seattle Seahawks, said he wouldn't have missed it for the world. To me, that speaks volumes. Former Wake Forest quarterback Riley Skinner was there and told Tom Sorensen in The Observer about how close the linebackers on the Demon Deacons were. Now, he played offense. He wasn't even on the defense.
Right.
And he wanted to show his support for you. That's testament to the kind of person you are and the kind of coach you are and the kind of relationship you were able to establish with players. What's your secret?
Well, I don't know if there is a secret. It's just, you know, you just get involved with kids, and I think it kind of goes back to what I was talking about. You know, Aaron wasn't just number 59 to myself and my family. You know, you try to, you know, model for these guys. You take an interest in their lives, and you care about them. And that was, you know, that was a lot of fun for me that day to see those guys there, whether they played at Georgia or Wake Forest. Most of them were Wake Forest guys. But you know, you just try to develop a relationship with people, and we believe to be successful on the field, we have to be successful outside the field, outside the white line, so to speak. And you know, I think that was just a testament of that.
You grew up on a farm in Kansas, and I'm looking at you, and you don't look like a football player to me. You're not the
heard
big.
That before.
You're not a big bulky dude who's going to knock me over in with pads. What is it about football that has made it? Because this is your life. Yeah. What is it about football for you?
Well, for me, it's I tell the guys all the time. I've told the chancellor this. He's heard this several times. Football is the ultimate team game. It takes so many different people to be successful. And it's never about one person. It's never about me or one coach or one player. You know, for us to be successful and to win games, we need everybody. So that whole philosophy of teaching kids, especially in today's world of, you know, Facebook and Twitter and look at me generation that we're dealing with, to get them to buy into the team, that's the fun part, to be successful and know that they have to count on somebody else to help them.
But, you know, I remember football before there was hot dogging in the end zone with a touchdown. And now when you see it on every player who makes a touchdown either drops a knee for God or does a dance in the end zone saying how great I am. What's up with that and where does that come from? And will you discourage that or let it happen?
No question you want to discourage it, because we tell our guys all the time, when you score – you need to act like you've been here before,
you know.
So, just, or you've made a sack. You know, that's really what you're supposed to do. So let's sack the quarterback, get the next call, and play. But it's – and the NCAA has really done a nice job of building in rules to take away the individual. You know, you can't wear your own towel and you can't wear wristbands or eye black with whatever you're wanting to promote individually. So they've taken a lot of that out and they've helped us from a coaching stand, from right. that standpoint.
And those rules don't apply to chancellors or ADs.
You know, we've talked about the importance of football to the athletic program and to students and to alumni and to the school, et cetera. But you've survived, Judy, for many, many years, even though in your heart of hearts, I know you've wanted football. You've survived without it, and the star of the athletic program at UNC Charlotte for years has been basketball. Now football is here, and football is like television. When television takes over an event, when television gets involved in something, it becomes their event. This is from a broadcast point of view. You could be on the radio for 100 years, or you could just be having your committee meeting. But if it's on television, television runs it. They own it. Football tends to do the same thing. Football becomes the end-all, be-all, king-of-the-hill sport. How do you deal with the other coaches in the other sports who haven't had to deal with these pesky people over here all this time?
Well, you know, it's interesting. They don't view football as being pesky, and they certainly don't view Brad and his staff that way.
Well,
and
well, a lot of attention credit, hogs.
Well, but a lot of credit goes to Brad and those because they have fit in within the atmosphere that we have, and it's kind of all-inclusive in the athletic program. But what football brings to the table for our other sports is incredible. For recruiting, now we can compete with anybody. In the past, when we brought recruits in, mm-hmm. oh, they'd just been to Ohio State for the weekend as a recruit, or they'd been to Cincinnati, or they'd been to Louisville. They had a football weekend to impress them with.
Right.
We've never had that. And so now our coaches are chomping at the bit to bring in recruits. And I mean, in every sport they are. And we've got it lined up where they can sit, their families and recruits. And so we have woven football into the mix of what we've got and tried to keep them humble, and they are humble. They have not come in and said, hey, we're top dogs. We understand how football is viewed across the country, and it's important to us that we have a top-notch football program, but it's also important that we keep it at the level where it fits in within the context of how we want to run our program.
Let's talk about some nuts and bolts here. Tell us about the new stadium. What can people expect?
They are going to have a great experience. Of course, we had a full house at our scrimmage, our green-white scrimmage this spring, but it's 15,300 seats, roughly divided in half. Half seats go to students, half go to the paying customers. There's a group of customers that happen to sit in chairback seats if they bought FSLs, and there are some others who have what do you call them, stadium back seating. We didn't put backs on the student seats because we expect them to be on their feet the whole game.
That's right.
There'll be a drum line there. We have wonderful concessions and restrooms there. And one thing people should know is that a stadium is expandable to 40,000 with the same footprint because it was designed to be expanded over time. But we don't plan to expand until we have so much demand that we can't stand it and that we can afford to pay for it.
By design, you are starting your program with what has been described as playing lower-level teams. But in just 2 years, you'll be playing Southern Miss and Marshall and Louisiana Tech. And this kind of morphed in the middle of acquiring this program, didn't it?
Yes, it did. And that was due to the national climate that was going on with conference realignment. And there's been so much shifting going on that we thought there might be some opportunities that would be available to us. But quite honestly, we didn't think they'd be available that quickly since we'd never thrown or kicked a football competitively.
Hmm. You said, Coach, that this year is you have to establish how we're going to play, how we're going to work, and what we expect when we go to the games. You only get one chance to start. What does that mean, how we're going to play?
Well, I think the key for us is how hard our guys are going to play when we go out there and how we're going to conduct ourselves. And, you know, when we want our opponent, when they leave the stadium, they're like, you know what, we don't want to play those guys again. They're tough guys. They're going to play by the book. They're going to do it the right way. But they've been in a physical battle, and that's really what we mean, you know, by that, because we get a chance to establish this. You get one chance. And so we've sold that hard to our team about – you know, what product we put out there and how hard we play and how we play is important to me.
This is kind of something I don't think many people realize, but UNC Charlotte, because of all the land it has available to it, at some point in the very near future, may be the largest state university in North Carolina. Would that have happened sooner had there been a football program sooner?
I think it's likely we'll be the second largest. It's unlikely we would overtake NC State. But we certainly think that we'll become a very large and significant public university in excess of 35,000, maybe as many as 40,000 students. Mike, we've been seeing applications going up at record rates even without football. And if you look at the demography for higher education in the Charlotte region, it has continued to rise. We had 8,600 applications the year I arrived, and we had over 14,000 completed applications this year. So I think even without football, but with that said, I think there are certainly some students who have found UNC Charlotte to be a more attractive option because of football.
I only have a minute left. It's safe to characterize this, I think, as somewhat of a gamble, given not only the money that you borrowed for stadium construction, but also the fact that football adds enormous expenses to any athletic program and the need to expand female athletic sponsorships under Title IX. So do you stay awake nights worrying about where the money is going to come from to pay for all of this?
Not a bit. We have we've had a great plan, a very clear budget plan from the beginning, and had we not had that at the beginning, I wouldn't have approved it.
Now, these guys on the team, some of them have been here for a while practicing and not playing any games. What's the atmosphere like? Are they ready? Do they want to go now? What's
the
deal?
They would go tomorrow if they could. They've been practicing against each other, hitting each other. They're ready to play against somebody else.
And any predictions on the opening game against Campbell?
49-0.
That's his story, and he's sticking with it.
He is. Stick with it.
Five home games. They all start at noon. What's the parking situation going to be like very quickly?
Well, we have a very good parking plan, and if people follow the plan, they have their pass, and they will enter at the proper places.
And some of these kids haven't played anything but high school football, right? So what's it going to be like to prepare them for 15,000 people in the stands?
It's going to be exciting. The spring game helped do that, so it'll be exciting for them.
Brad Lambert, head football coach of the winning 49ers, Judy Rose and Philip DeBlois, Athletic Director and Chancellor of the University. Thank you for the hour.